From here, where do I go? Going to Iowa. What am I going to do there? Who the hell knows? We're going to raise, you know what we're going to do? We're going to raise a lot of money for the vets. That's what we're going to do.
If he's unwilling to stand on the debate stage with the other candidates, then I would like to invite Donald right now to engage in a one-on-one debate with me anytime between now and the Iowa caucus.
The president himself noted that he was not a big fan of participating in presidential debates, but he never backed out of a debate 2 days before it was scheduled to be held.
Josh Earnest, I should turn my microphone off. Josh Earnest, Ted Cruz, and of course Donald Trump. And we'll get to all that in just a second. Chuck Todd joins us from Meet the Press. Chuck Todd at Chuck Todd on social media. Chuck, before we get to any of that, I just heard that Sting is the halftime entertainer at the NBA All-Star Game. Does that make any sense? It doesn't to me.
No, it doesn't at all. That doesn't feel like that matches the fan base.
Beyonce's at the Super Bowl. Beyonce's at the Super Bowl.
I'm not a big fan of the NBA this year, but okay. Whatever.
I'm with you. It's very odd. Speaking of very odd, the entire campaign is very odd. Are you in Des Moines yet?
I am actually just staring at the beautiful Capitol building they have here right now.
We will join you there on Sunday. We'll do the show there Monday and Tuesday morning. Ro Khan will be there Monday afternoon. So we got it covered, and Chuck's got it covered, of course. What can you tell us about Meet the Press on Sunday?
Well, we're going to be live here. I got at least two of the top three Republicans going at this point, all set. I think we've agreed to wait a few hours. You always get me right before I'm allowed to totally go.
No, listen, I get it. I just figured if there's a chance to promote it, there's your chance.
Oh, yeah. No. But two of the top three Republicans, I'll let you guess which of the two, and likely at least one, if not both, Democrats, so we'll see.
Neither one are Dan Quayle.
Neither are Dan Quayle.
Okay.
That is correct.
All right, the rest of
that is somebody that will not be on the show.
All right, so here's the big news in case anyone missed it. Trump's not going somewhere. Trump is such a big deal now. When he doesn't go somewhere, it's news. Chuck, I maintain that Donald Trump is, and Dave Ennett here brought up the best analogy I've heard in a long time. The simple solution to this is Donald Trump is our Kim Jong-un. He's a privileged, spoiled little brat who says whatever he says when he says it. And the consequences don't seem to matter.
You say consequences don't seem to matter. What consequences? he is yet to pay for things that any other candidate would have paid dearly for, whether it's things he said, people he's offended, stuff he hasn't done. I mean, look at the way he just campaigns in Iowa. Had any other person campaigned in the state and basically refused to spend the night in the state? You know, most of the time, I mean, I think with a rare exception, and I cannot think of a time he has spent the night in Iowa yet, but I got to think at least one time he has. But he literally, he'll fly in and he, you know, wants to sleep in his own bed or sleep in a Trump hotel. So he is, and there are no Trump hotels out here in Iowa. So he does things his own way. And not only has he gotten away with it, he has thrived. And on this debate thing, it's petulant. It's all the things that you say. And guess what? I don't think it's going to hurt him one bit. And if anything, he could benefit because tonight's debate will become a Cruz bash fest.
And in the midst of the Cruz bash fest with him not there, he'll probably get better numbers for his other event that he's doing, some put together in the last 12 hours event, quote, for the troops.
Can you imagine if he gets 5,000 people to show up to his event tonight? And he's able to commandeer 5,000 people across town, in the same town, mind you,
right,
as the debate. It will show you his power right now. And, you know, look, most other candidates wouldn't have the guts to take on the mouthpiece of the Republican Party and Fox News. Donald Trump doesn't have a problem with that. I mean, it's been quite remarkable to watch. In many ways, you could argue that this is what you reap what you sow. They've been sort of the party, particularly on the way they've managed debates, they've tried to choose moderators, they've tried to choose news organizations, and now they shouldn't be shocked when a candidate decides to choose a moderator, choose a news organization.
Yeah, and Fox's response to it was, Roger Ailes in particular, was, you know, don't jump
that
into
was
the...
childish.
Yeah, it really was.
It was childish. He made it, he made it where Trump should have been the only petulant person here. And I think we found out that Roger is, you know, he's still a once an operative, always an operative. You know, he's not a news guy. He's an operative. And he's trying to get rid of Trump in some way, and it frustrates.
And the brilliance of Trump here is that he took direct insults on women everywhere, and specifically on Megyn Kelly, who was doing her job and, frankly, doing it well, and took mm-hmm. that and made it and completely flipped it where he's the victim. David Copperfield called and said, I got to see how you do that.
You know, it's unbelievable. And the people that thought, look, it is. He is a force of personality. I think he's going to provide a blueprint, frankly, for other candidates in the future to realize that, you know, don't retreat when you're having a bad news cycle. Own it and somehow deflect and attack. That's what Trump has done. Every time you think, he basically ignores criticism and just marches forward and plows forward and
it's
owns
controversy
and owns things. It is, but you know what? He outlined this strategy. In fairness to him, he's outlined the way he acts in his books, Art of the Deal. I mean, he basically, you know, he talks about sort of, you know, phony strength and how to sort of play an opponent like this or play somebody that you're negotiating with. I mean, so it isn't, he believes everything he wrote in that book. I guess you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, well, listen, denial's a dangerous state, but whatever state Trump's living in, you know, it's like that old joke from Friends, what color is the sky in your world? And Trump's apparently is a bright orange, the same hue as his hair. So the debate goes on tonight, the special event goes on tonight, and unbelievably, it appears that come Monday, when we're all in Iowa, the much tighter race is going to be Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, unless the polls are completely sideways.
How about that? Look, we're still... If Trump were any other candidate right now, okay, and he had been running a more traditional campaign, and we'd seen all these polls in the last week showing him with anywhere from a 5 to 8 point lead, we'd say this thing is over. Trump's got the momentum. But there is a little seed of doubt that we all have with Trump. Part of it is, I think, we still can't believe he's the front runner, right? Some of us who do this for a living. But part of it is he is relying on new voters to show up. And there hasn't been evidence yet that the new voters are going to come out.
No, that's a good point.
We don't have higher voter registration rolls. So we don't know. Now, all we have is his rally. And by the way, people show up to his rally. And people wait in line in very cold weather. And so if you're willing to do that, you got to assume they're willing to caucus. Bernie Sanders is waiting for these new folks to turn out as well. So, I mean, I think that to me is the drama of Monday night, which is, will these new people, either for Sanders or Trump, show up or won't they? And if they don't, then Cruz and Clinton are going to win.
Chuck, how many heads will explode if the nominees are Trump and Sanders? I mean, really?
It means Michael Bloomberg run. It means we have a crazy three-way race. It means it's the most bizarre presidential election in our history. And it will mean heads will explode. But I actually think it would be healthy for the two political parties. They both need to be reformed, and they almost need to blow up their establishments in order to reform them.
And the system needs a flushing.
They would do that.
Yeah. And then the great
border. I could argue it'd be good for the system.
The great border debate will then be, how many Americans do we allow into Canada? So it'll shift north quickly.
Yes.
Chuck Todd, thanks.
They're going to be like pushing us away.
Thanks. We'll see you Monday in Iowa.
You got it, Steve.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Chuck Todd, at Chuck Todd. Kevin, what you're just saying in my ear just a second ago that the listeners couldn't hear?
Sorry, Steve. I was saying bye to Chuck. 9 o'clock Sunday mornings.
Meet the press. 9 o'clock Sunday mornings, Meet the Press. But he'll be on with us at some point Monday morning.
Yes, likely. Monday. Just hammering down the time. But he'll stop by or be on the phone with us, one of the two.
Chuck Todd, you know, he's a rock star.
Literally
everybody,
a rock star?
Yeah, he plays a mean guitar. No, everybody wants a little bit of Chuck once he gets out in these events.
It's true.
So, and does a nice job with Meet the Press.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here, and Eric works for a company that he started. Well, it started out as an Amway distributorship, but then he got into politics. And what do you guys do?
We do electoral campaigns and public affairs cross country.
And Pat, your company is?
Next Generation Strategies.
And you do a similar thing?
Lobbying and media relations.
Okay. Matt Strawn is standing by on the phone. Matt is the former chair of the Iowa Republican Party. And we like Matt, and we encourage you to follow him on social media, at Matt Strawn, S-T-R-A-W-N. How's the circus? And I shouldn't even say that because Showtime will sue me, because that's what they're calling their campaign special.
Well, guys, I don't know if you can feel caucus fever all the way over there on the lakeshore, but it is real. It is, you know, Donald Trump is getting exactly what he wanted. We're talking about him, and we're going to be talking about him tomorrow. So it's fascinating time here. It's like nothing I've ever seen in all my years of Iowa politics, and I think that follows what we heard from Chuck Todd earlier this morning.
We're going to be joining you. We're looking forward to this, joining you on Monday and Tuesday from Des Moines, and Ro Khan will be there Monday afternoon. Monday and Tuesday morning, so I hope you can join us then, too. But we were talking about something off the air a second ago. Would anyone in Iowa with any knowledge of how the process works have guessed that you could win, presuming that and assuming that Trump wins, by never sleeping in Iowa, with the exception of one Holiday Inn night a couple of nights ago, by not going and shaking hands with farmers, by not getting some farm stuff on your boots, by not going around and doing the retail thing? He hasn't done any of it.
No, he's completely remade the, if his folks do turn out on February 1st, he has kind of remade the caucus map. Now, so far, I think that's a Trump-specific phenomenon. You know, there's no evidence that, you know, that's a path that others could take. But I think a lot of that is due to the people that are attracted to Trump aren't the traditional party activists who have that expectation of not just meeting, but sitting down with the candidate they're ultimately going to support. So in a strange way, the people that are, you know, supporting Trump and turning out to these rallies don't know that they're supposed to be, you know, candidates are supposed to be in front of them on bended knee. So it's been absolutely fascinating and upended everything that we thought we knew about caucus politics.
Hey, Matt's Pat. Sorry about that Rose Bowl loss, but what are the...
Why you got to start?
I had to take that shot at him. He's a friend of mine. Hey, what are the numbers, though? And we were talking earlier a couple weeks ago that Trump's going to have to put on the board to win, or the numbers that are going to have to show up for him to do what has to be done to win.
In regards
to
turnout for the caucus?
Yeah, turnout, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I couldn't quite hear you, Pat. I thought you said 7-0 first in the Big Ten Iowa basketball. Before we...
I knew this was going to stay. Vicious, just vicious.
You know, this is, you know, what you need to watch, turnout, and of course it's cliche, but in the caucuses even more so, because, you know, we're not talking about, you know, just going into a primary where you can take off over your lunch hour and throw in a vote, but it's going to require 60 to 90 minutes of your time, and for these Trump people that have never participated in the process, to show up. And if we have anything that looks like a traditional caucus turnout, about 120 to 130,000, I still think Cruz has the slight edge. But the closer that number climbs to 145, 150,000, and those new caucus goers that Trump is turning out, then I think, dare I say, it's going to be a huge night for Donald Trump on February 1st. And what is fascinating here is you can register as a Republican on caucus night. And the Trump events around the state, when they have their pregame speakers, it's not local politicians throwing out red meat like you're used to seeing at rallies, but it's his staff on stage explaining just how easy it is to register caucus night, and then literally says, if you can spell T-R-U-M-P on a blank slip of paper, you have caucused.
And that might be a high bar for some of those.
That is a high bar for some of the
capital
Trump
T.
So, Matt, here's the thing that's remarkable to me is that there are still people talking about a conspiracy theory that you will have because of that ability to register caucus night. Lines and lines of troublemaking Democrats who are going to come in to try to make sure Trump wins. Because the feeling is Hillary would be able to beat Trump in a one-on-one, whereas maybe some of the other candidates in a general campaign could make things a little more interesting. I mean, and by the way, I don't buy it, because I don't buy anything anymore, because I clearly know nothing.
Well, listen, if we've learned anything over the last 12 months of the Donald Trump experience, none of us have any idea what's actually going to happen. But every caucus cycle, there's some theory like that, where there's infiltration of the caucuses. And it's incredibly rare, especially when you have, you know, Democrats and liberals and, well, actually socialists, literally, feeling the burn on the Democrat side. You know, there's so much energy and activity with the Democratic caucuses going on simultaneously. I think that will be fairly low. And, you know, one thing right now, and I think you may have talked about in a previous segment, you know, there's still no real evidence of this surge in voter registration that some people are pointing to and saying, well, see, maybe this Trump thing isn't real. But they are training their people to actually do that caucus night. So it is almost impossible to divine any clues other than anecdotal evidence right now. But it just feels, in talking to legislators at the Capitol, you know, who just got back from their districts, it just feels like there's a Trump surge building.
Hey, Matt, what, and I know it's different because it's a caucus, what time will we know something? I mean, we don't get, you know, rolling results like you do in a traditional race.
Yeah, so 1,681 precincts across the state will all start at 7 o'clock Central on Monday night. Some procedural matters. Everybody gets to speak on behalf of their candidates. The voting usually starts about 45 minutes to an hour in. Pretty much real-time reporting with the new app that the party is using. So you'll start to see those returns come in probably about 8:30, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock is when you'll see the first returns come in. And all we do, just so people who are following can understand the caucus process on the Republican side, it's just straight aggregate vote. So we tally every vote from those 1,681 precincts, and that's your caucus result.
You could announce it. Pretty comfortable in saying you could announce a winner by 10 o'clock?
Well, as the guy who presided over it 4 years ago when we had...
hey, thank you very much. You saved the union.
A little PTSD for me.
Every time somebody asks Matt that, he flinches.
Right, exactly. I'm actually hiding under my desk now.
last word, Eric.
Hey, Matt, is there an analog to Obama in 08 where nobody predicted the kind of turnout that... I mean, Hillary ultimately reached her stated caucus goal and yet got blown out of the water because you had that sort of unexpected turnout. Is that an analog here on the Republican side?
Yeah, and I think if we wake up in the morning and Donald Trump had a huge night, that's exactly what happened to Ted Cruz. I suspect Ted Cruz will hit their vote goal in anything that looks like a traditional caucus model. But the unknown is, you know, those 20 to 40,000 new people, do they show up? And if they show up, odds are they're voting for Donald Trump.
T-R-U-M-P. Practice. Matt, thank you. We'll see you in Iowa.
Yeah, we'll see you over here in a couple days, guys.
Excellent. Matt Strawn, good guy. At Matt Strawn, he's a former Iowa Republican chair. We'll get traffic from Mary now. On 720 WGN, Rick Pearson will join us. Talk about the state of the state yesterday and whether Cullerton and Rauner have a deal of sorts moving forward. Before that, here's Mary.
Some have said local control is impossible, and yet many in this chamber have embraced it before, voting repeatedly to give Chicago more control in its contracting and collective bargaining rules.
722. I speculated yesterday before the State of the State that the speech in Governor Rauner's head may include duct tape and throwing Mike Madigan into the lake, but that's not what came up yesterday. It was asking for help, and it was friendly gov. Did it get over Rick Pearson?
Well, Steve, I think, you know, actually, I really appreciated the blog item you wrote about your take on the state of the state. I thought it was actually very spot on. But
thanks.
It was you never sometimes know which Bruce Rauner you're going to get. And after days of name-calling leading up to the state of the state, you had the governor asking for bipartisan cooperation. In fact, some Republican noted that, hey, he didn't call Mike Madigan any names. So, you know, that shows some intent here. But the fact of the matter is he's still sticking to his pro-business, union-weakening agenda. It's an election year. Democrats want to preserve their majorities. There are signs of some cooperation on certain things, like the state's public employee pension issue. But even then, when you have the fact that it is a legislative election year, unions are big contributors to Democrats, even with cooperation between Senate President John Cullerton and Governor Bruce Rauner, I'm not sure in the end how far that really goes this year.
Is the Cullerton-Rauner survivor-like alliance real?
Oh, I think it is. And in fact, Cullerton has been, you know, backdoor looking for ways to try to find things that he and the governor can agree upon and move forward and try to break the impasse. But at the same time, you have kind of this political triangulation going on of Rauner being viewed by some Democrats as trying to, you know, spin off Cullerton and try to break an alliance with House Speaker Mike Madigan. And ultimately, any proposal in the legislature has to go through the Speaker's office.
I know that Cullerton is in Madigan have a certain loyalty that's party driven, but what's the behind the scenes story between the two of them?
Well, I mean, for a long time, John Cullerton served in the House and was a top deputy to Mike Madigan. But that having been said, when you become a top legislative leader, there's always a little bit of tension that exists between the two chambers. We've seen it time and time again. And in fact, we've seen time and time again where governors will try to use the Senate President's office as a way to kind of leverage in for their agenda. So, but nevertheless, Cullerton is still, you know, a very strong Democrat. And while in the past he's tried to advance some things that Mike Madigan wouldn't necessarily go along with, without complete agreement, nothing moves forward.
So what you learned from yesterday, and normally the State of the State's like the State of the Union, there's a lot of proposals, I'd love to do this year, but you guys got to get behind it, and on and on and on. Is there anything that broke through or cut through that's different yesterday that has legs going forward today and beyond?
Well, one major thing, and this was kind of a shift attention kind of thing by the governor, was talking about needing to change the way that the state distributes money to its public schools. And that's something that has been talked about in abstract for a while. The part of the problem is that wealthier school districts, traditionally suburban school districts, don't get a lot of state aid right now and are reluctant to give up any more than that they've got right now. So for the Republican governor to support this, he is in some essence taking on a big part of his Republican caucus. That having been said, the way the governor phrased this is that we need to change the school aid formula, but make sure no district loses any money. Well, to do that, you're going to have to pump a lot of money into the public schools, and that's going to require a tax increase.
The Rauner Rahm war o words seems to have quieted. What's happening there?
Well, I think that's just that was the nature of the speech yesterday. He didn't mention Mike Madigan. He didn't mention Rahm Emanuel. So he did say that around the Chicago area, there is economic growth despite what he called the horrible mismanagement of Cook County and Chicago. So, I mean, there's still the back and forth that's going on between the two guys. But again, as I've said before, they're businessmen, and in some respects, that's their nature of how they act.
And you've heard the conspiracy theory as well that the Rauner attack on Rahm is actually a Rauner Rahm alliance, with the end game being what?
Yeah. Well, one, I don't buy the conspiracy theory.
Right.
Two, what the governor said about public schools in no way directly impacts the most immediate need for the Chicago public schools, which is that nearly $500 million and pension relief. CPS was supposed to go out for borrowing yesterday. That got pulled back. A lot of questions going on about, you know, what happened there, and is a sign that maybe the market isn't interested in buying CPS bonds.
It's Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin, of course, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com. You know, I don't know if you know this, Senator, finest political writer in America.
Absolutely, he is.
And by the way, all of his spelling and punctuation are top-notch as well.
They are, yeah. At Rep 30.
So, you got a guest for Sunday?
Yes, we're going to use the second hour from 8 to 9 o'clock to set up the Iowa caucuses. I've got my friend Robin Johnson, who's a professor and political consultant out at Monmouth College. And I've got my good buddy Bob Sector, formerly of the Tribune, and now enjoying his retirement.
We will be in Des Moines on Monday and Tuesday, and I'm sure calling you regularly to go, what's going on with this?
I don't know that you'll be on the air long enough to explain how a caucus actually takes place.
Andre did a great job of that this week. Yeah. Andre explained the whole thing. So it turns out I'm caucusing for all the candidates on both sides. I didn't even know I could do that. It's sort of a Chicago move in Iowa. At Rap30 on social media, RAP30. It's Rick Pearson and Sunday Spin, 7 a.m. Sunday. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
7:28, more with Eric and Pat. And later on, the Caucus Rockets. Mm-hmm. Who are you featuring today?
I am featuring two up-and-coming political advisors, political pundits, Eric and Pat. You might have heard of them.
Not familiar with their work. 729.
But actually, we're actually going to explain. People keep saying, yeah, these are great, but what does caucus even mean?
Okay. All right.
We're going to delve into that and why it's called caucus.
Well, because it's a funny word that people would remember.
Sort of.
Yeah. It's 729. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Our average working family is making less than they were 8 years ago. We are virtually tied for the highest property taxes in America, and we have far more layers of government and mountains of debt at every level.
Governor Rauner, State of the State yesterday, 740. We'll start there. I have a new blog up at WGNradio.com that you can see. But here is Eric Adelson and Pat Brady rejoining me. Here are my simple suggestions. Let's see how many he actually took yesterday. People of Illinois have to become actively involved and have to say, I'm sick of this. I'm not going to take it anymore. That remains to be seen. Rauner continues to work with Cullerton on school funding and a new pension deal. The governor agrees to table any discussions of union reform. He says,
"Oh, my friend Steve, all the time I've spent with you, this is where you go astray.
We're not wrong.
Okay, hold on. Right.
He says, "I will table all discussions of union reform until after this budget is resolved and the next one due on July 1st." Two more. The speaker will return to negotiations immediately and publicly pledge to help solve the budget crisis. I know that's the funniest one. And I mentioned Cullerton. Cullerton gets to go. Oh, and the governor will work towards bipartisan issues that can actually be bipartisan issues in a show of faith and trust to try to build that across the aisle so they can work towards bigger things. Now tell me where I'm wrong.
Number three, he can't concede the issues that he ran on.
He's not conceding.
Well, you're saying table it, but it's part of the budget discussions. I know others don't agree, but it is part and parcel of the budget discussions, and he can't table that. He has no negotiating leverage if he tables that, and those are the issues he ran for governor on. So he's got to keep those in the negotiations.
What I'm maintaining is, unless you find a way to say to Madigan and Company, I am not going to break up your unions to the point where it sinks in, and say I'm willing to revisit this with you on July 2nd, after you get the next two budgets done, then you're fine. If he has no other negotiating stance, then I've missed the memo for an entire year.
Well, then he doesn't have.
There are other things to play with.
He doesn't. No, there really aren't. These are these are some core issues.
Okay, so you're not going anywhere.
He does. Well, no, they can. He's actually, and we saw yesterday, the pension agreement and the talk about school funding reformation. He's come a long way as a Republican.
Oh, I agree with he's come a long,
but the other guys haven't gone anywhere. And actually, he's actually talking about tax increases. So this is a core issue that he talked. His whole speech yesterday was about we need more taxpayers, not more taxes. Right now, the solution is the Democrats submitted a budget $4.5 billion out of balance, and they want to fund it with a tax increase with no reforms.
I understand that, but what's the bare minimum the governor would accept in regards to union reforms in exchange for getting back to this and getting a solution?
Well, here's the problem. The Democrats' backs against the wall. If you look at the money they take from the unions, 52-53% of what they get from the unions and the rest from the trial lawyers, they will not back down on anything so far. So that's why we are where we are.
No, I get but I'm not concerned about where we are, the history of any of this. I'm concerned about where we go from here. And let me get Eric in on this. Were you moved at all? Well, that's a dangerous question. Were you moved at all by the fact that the governor said yesterday, I'm working with Cullerton and I want to work with people to get this done?
I wasn't. What I did is I took the governor at his word. Look, he's a bottom line guy. He said at the top of his speech, our job is to improve the quality of life for the people of Illinois. By his own standard, a year in, he's a catastrophic failure. And look at the numbers. He's a bottom line business guy. Our debts are bigger than they ever were. Our unpaid bills are higher than they ever were. Our credit rating is worse. Our social safety net has been shredded. And yes, I know that change takes a long time, but here's my biggest problem with the governor. He is entitled to his own opinions, but he's not entitled to his own facts. And he stands up there and he attacks AFSCME with a bunch of facts that aren't true. He says we pay these public sector workers more than private sector. University of Illinois study says absolutely not true. He says Illinois pays public employees more than any other state in the country. University of Illinois study, that's not true. We're 9th or 10th in the state. He stands up there and says our neighboring states pay less in taxes than we do. It's categorically not true. You know, Illinois pays 3.75%. You look at Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Indiana, they all pay higher. taxes across the board. They tax retirement income. And if you look, and again, I'm not for higher taxes, but if you really want to make comparisons, if we adopted the tax structure of every one of our neighboring states, we would plug most of our deficit hole today. So I do think it really isn't about, you know, him backing down on reform. I don't know what union reform means. This guy wants to get rid of the folks who really, you know, protect our communities and take care of our seniors and work every day. I do agree there are changes and blame to go around, but he stands up there and he makes up his own facts. And by his own standard, we are worse off than we were when he took office.
All right, we got to get to the primary stuff. Pat, answer to that.
Well, I mean, obviously, I disagree, and anybody that understands how the state of Illinois works understands that the pensions that the public sector folks are getting are way too expensive for what the state can afford, and this is a product of a lot of mistakes by both Democrats and Republicans, and something needs to change.
This is where I think we run into the wall over and over and over again. We've got to take – nothing in the past matters. You can't change a second of the past. So there's not a thing that leads up to today that matters. Wait, not a thing. So what are you going to do starting today that's going to change where we are? Both sides.
Well, you saw it yesterday, and that there has been movement on this pension bill that Rick talked about. Funny you should say that it might not make it through a primary election, but this is a bill that the union supported when it was submitted by the Senate president. But now that Governor Rauner says, hey, you know what, this may not be a bad idea, they're saying they don't support it. So there's political hypocrisy to go around. But that's the movement on school funding, the movement on talking about tax increases if you get reform. So there has been a lot of movement.
You know, it's a problem when newspaper columnists start saying Blagojevich might have been a better governor than Rauner.
Steinberg? Is that a real columnist?
Well, I'm just saying it's a columnist who writes a column.
He's
every
an
day.
Angry man.
But here, the thing on the pension reform, and I agree with you. You know that, Pat. If they can sit down and come into a deal, that's great. But he sort of acts like it's amateur hour. He stands up at a press conference and then says all this stuff was agreed to that Cullerton never agreed to. And he talks about we're going to reform this, but this is our – we've declared victory over the unions now. And it's sort of a kick in the teeth to anybody who wants to work with him, and it's not good faith.
He cannot continue to call people names. He can't continue to go after Tom Dart when Tom Dart brings up something that's a completely legitimate point. He's got to get rid of all of that. If yesterday was the start of that, that's great. But Madigan can't not do the job. He can't not show up for meetings. He can't show up for a nice, safe press conference afterwards.
Did you notice yesterday, and this was a listen to that speech, and this is indicative, I think, of how disengaged he's been. He couldn't properly pronounce Rauner's chief of staff last name.
Mike Madigan?
Yeah, Madigan couldn't. But that's like either completely arrogant or I'm not involved.
Well, they probably haven't met. It's 7:47. Let's get to the traffic, and Mary's here with that, and then we'll come back and talk about what we're doing in Iowa. And, Andre, you're going to have these two on as guests later on in the caucus
in
raucous.
The caucus raucous, yep. That'll
all
be a fun one.
Mary, what do you got? Stevie Wonder, 751. Steve Cochran Show continues. Eric Adelson's here. And, Eric, how do people follow you on social media?
Adel64.
A-D-E-L 6-4. And Pat?
Pat_Brady.
All right, so let's talk about the primary. We're going to be in Iowa Monday and Tuesday morning, Roe on Monday afternoon. The Democrat thing just fascinates me because you brought this up earlier when we were talking with Matt Strawn. Does this feel to you like a repeat of 2008?
Boy, I tell you, if I'm sitting in Hillary Clinton's shoes, it sure, as Yogi Berra would say, feels like deja vu all over again. I think the difference is... As much as there's been a bit of a Sanders surge here, he still has not shown the ability to cross over when you get into these bigger states to a diverse audience. Now, that could change if he sweeps these first two primaries. And then I think you look at South Carolina kind of having to be a firewall for Hillary Clinton.
But they go to Nevada first, don't they?
Well, they do. It's a caucus in Nevada.
Right.
Correct. And then you have, I think 8 days later, you have the South Carolina primary.
So it could be an 0-3.
Well, if it's 0-4, I think then she's in deep, deep trouble. But I think she can lose Iowa and New Hampshire. I think it's a long primary process, but I think she can survive. That's not an ideal situation. So I think one of the things to look at, and Pat and I were just talking about this, conventional wisdom is always wrong, and that's what the beauty of when the voters get involved. One thing for people who are really into this to pay attention to is Saturday night, the Des Moines Register will come out with their final pre caucus poll. And as much as I've derided polling as being flawed and the paradigm being broken, the polling outfit that does the Des Moines Register poll, they do a much deeper dive and they have a good pulse to the caucus goers. They're the ones that predicted Obama would win. I think they predicted Santorum would win. So I think if you want to look for signals before Monday, those who can't get enough, Saturday night will be a sort of the biggest inflection point before Monday.
And is Bernie Sanders popular to this level because of some magical words he said and some incredible idea that no one else has had before?
No, or Chairman Mao had the same idea. same ideology.
Different outfit. Different outfit, different haircut. Or is Hillary so unpopular anybody could have filled Bernie Sanders'
shoes? I think that's a little unfair on Hillary.
I'm asking.
I think it's what you said, the perfect storm on Trump is not dissimilar on Sanders. We have an anti-Washington, anti-establishment.
Anti-media
electorate. We have sort of the frumpy, grumpy anti-politician guy. I mean, he's sort of the opposite of Trump, but he's also the opposite of a blow-dried soundbite politician, a guy from the Bronx.
He's like your crazy grandfather that you only see twice a year, but you get a hoot out of him. Right. You just go, oh, it's cool. Plus, he gives me money.
Yeah, it seems like that's the young appeal because the college kids go crazy.
Well, it's sort of the anti-cool is cool to the millennials, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of that, I think. And so, and look, he is saying some things that get people's heads nodding in the same way that Trump has. He has struck a nerve. And I think, how far it goes, we'll see. But look, nobody.
But it's all turnout based, right? It's still all turnout based.
It's turnout based, but it becomes. Look, at the high. Let's also put this in perspective. At the highest record turnout Iowa caucus ever, that's only 16% registered voters in Iowa. In Iowa. 16%.
I had no idea. That's 16% is the high.
We're so focused on a fraction of a homogenous state that really doesn't represent the rest of the country, but they're first to go, and so it has outsized.
Well, let me flip it then. If Hillary wins, is Bernie done?
I don't think he's done, but I think that's a huge, huge win for Hillary if she pulls out Iowa. If she doesn't, I just that plane ride from Des Moines to Manchester. Boy, that's a long flight if you're Hillary Clinton looking back 8 years ago and having gone through a similar thing. But I think she can survive it.
Michael Bloomberg can jump in at any time, and he said he wouldn't run against Hillary. He would run if Bernie Sanders looked like he was headed for the nomination. And Bloomberg can do that as late as he wants. But are you ever going to hear a draft Biden movement?
I think you'll see some of that. The problem is, there are ballot access rules, as Pat knows.
And there's sore loser rules for Trump going third party.
Well, for
party,
Trump
right?
doing through that. But I'm saying for a guy like Biden, there's a point at which you can't get on the ballot in primary states
to
win delegates.
He wouldn't be
on the
ballot here,
There's another factor.
Could they do it at the convention?
Sure, if after a certain number of ballots you free up the delegates. You know, there's another point here, which is under the arcane delegate rules, I don't know the Republican side, I know the Democratic side, there's a whole bunch of superdelegates already pledged. There's a whole bunch of people who, when they vote the first time, have to vote for Hillary Clinton.
So you can't release a superdelegate?
Not until, I think, after a first ballot. But my point is, there hasn't even been a vote cast. He already has a 10 to 15% deficit in delegates to Hillary Clinton. So that's a lot to make up, even if he wins Iowa and New Hampshire.
Democrats rigged it up pretty good this time. Doing the debates Christmas Eve during the Super Bowl.
And now we're at a point where Hillary would like to do an extra debate, and Bernie's going, no, I'm done. It's just fascinating. It's fascinating to watch. All right, on the Republican side of things, just give me a little preview of what you anticipate tonight. Will it be a bash Cruz fest or a bash Trump fest or neither?
I'm hoping that everybody gets in the back of the room and says, hey, guys, it's getting late in the game here. We're going to start voting. We better start ripping this into this guy because nobody's touched him.
You're talking about Cruz?
Trump.
Oh, Trump. Okay.
But I suspect it's going to be a Cruz bash.
Right, because he's going to be the guy in the middle of the stage.
Yep.
I'm still not convinced Trump's not going. He
shows up about 12 seconds before kickoff.
I'm not convinced he doesn't make an entrance.
Just walk in.
Move over, Ted.
Yeah, exactly.
My podium.
We made a side bet on this, too. I said, there's no way he's showing up. You think he will.
Well, you're the logical side because he's reserved the arena. And
Right.
But I don't know. I just don't think Donald Trump's number one concern is the troops. I think Donald Trump's number one concern is the Trump. And why else would you believe anything other than that?
This time next week, we will know.
Yeah, it's a wacky ride. This kind of makes the whole 2000 election and the post game through January look like a day at the beach.
That was pretty weird, too.
Yeah.
I'm even kind of
Like, fast forward to next January, a statistical tie between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
And all of America leaves at the same time.
Did Chuck Todd really say today this would be good for the system?
Yeah, he
Bernie
did.
Sanders.
Yeah, but it's
Donald.
Early.
Gosh.
You know, Chuck wasn't sleeping well, I guess. Nice to see you guys. Thank you for the help, as always.
Thank you.
7:57. We're back after this on 720 WGN.